I said, if you are in a progressive district, you can include those amounts in the savings provision under the plan. Because once you're done with Schedule I and Schedule J, it shows a bottom line that needs to go to the creditors for your below median income debtors. You can pay that bottom line, and then you can take some of that amount that you think needs to go towards, you know, car expenses or other emergencies, and add that and put it into the emergency fund under your plan. In districts where you're not so progressive, then you can take that money, and you've got to convince your clients really to save it. And we know that's the hard part, because it doesn't matter that you said, okay, you've got a reserve in there for home expenses. It's not going to be saved for home expenses. But if you can really sit on your debtors to try and get that done, it would be helpful. Or you could sit on your judges to try and get a savings plan.
So for above median income debtors, that's where a lot more of the pushback came. And you do have to comply with the code requirements. But I would say, as debtors counsel, don't comply with any more than what the code requires, right? Show the court, hey, here's my means test. This is how much I have to pay according to the means test. So in this example that I put here, we had 209.87. This is the caveat, though, that the means test does actually reflect their income, right? That it's not, they weren't working for 3 months before when you did the means test and now they're full-time job or overtime, but that it does reflect what their income is. Then I'm going to pay about $12,592.20, which is 60 multiplied by that in my plan, and offer that to the unsecureds, and I'm not really going to take that money away. But for the rest of the budget, I want to make sure that I'm using it for what they need. And a lot of times, these debtors can afford to put a little bit more in savings than just a minimal amount. For these, I'm really careful on their means test. I want to make sure that I take everything that I'm allowed to take on the means test, and that I ask my debtors for supporting documentation, because sometimes we have higher than regular numbers. A lot of times they'll forget extra charitable contributions that they do once a year where they donate. And they also don't think to include money that they help immediate family with, which is something that you can take on the means test. A lot of the debtors aren't so good with managing their money. They're always helping people when they should be paying their bills, which is why they fell behind. So if you just kind of sit and talk to them and ask a couple questions, all of a sudden you'll find that in the last year, oh, they gave $2,000 to mom when she needed it. They gave extra money to, you know, their adult child, something like that. So those are things that you can list in the means test if you can show documentation they were for necessaries, right?
You know, I want to make a bit of an argument here. We have a situation where the means test shows one bottom line, frequently negative, and Schedule I and J shows a different bottom line. The cases hold that if there's been a change in circumstances after the means test, or that aren't reflected in the means test, then the amount in the means test gets adjusted to deal with the change in circumstances. But often what I see is where a trustee will come in and say, we want what's on Schedule J, and there hasn't been a change in circumstances. They're still measuring two different things. And I would challenge you to tell your trustees, no, I'm not paying you what's on J. This is an above median income debtor. There's not been a change in circumstances. What I owe under the law, what my client owes under the law, is the amount on the means test. And I'm taking the balance of that and I'm putting it into savings. And that's a fight that you need to pick with your trustees if your trustees are insisting on getting the bottom line on J. And the reason to have the fight isn't just to have the fight in principle. The reason is that making cases feasible is the most important thing you can do to have your clients succeed. We know there's a huge failure rate. And that failure rate is largely because we set payments too high. And we need the payments to account for exigencies, and that's in savings. So be careful what you do, and I would argue defend your client's ability to make payments in the future and recognize that there are going to be emergencies and deal with that. I'm not saying that your client should take the money and go to Cancun. They should save it. And the plan could provide for the savings, or you can simply say you're going to do the savings, but paying out the excess isn't required by the law. Now, it is required by the law if there's been a change in circumstance. But don't confuse cases that say change in circumstance with the mere fact that I and J reflect different things in the means test. Those are different questions, and I am unaware of any case that says absent a change in circumstances, you can look at J for an above median income debtor. You look at that only for a below median income debtor. Fight the battle.
And your means test does have a section for changes, right? And your software allows you to kind of go in there and play with the numbers and see, hey, if I show they're getting 300 extra in overtime and there is a change, what does this means test say that I'm going to have to provide? Because something that I also see is if you don't account for that, sometimes you'll overprovide because of the change, right? And it's something that can be provided with numbers to the trustee, which a lot of times if you provide those supporting documents, you have a lot easier battle ahead of you. And this is something that we've kind of already battled, right? With the In re Regos opinion and the Social Security income, they don't have to use that money, even though their budget shows that it's available to pay their unsecured creditors, because the Fifth Circuit has held it's not available for the payment of unsecured creditors. And with the Haven Act, that's now includes the VA disability up to the portion that's being used for necessities.
And again, this is my proselytizing. Regos applies to the means test. Regos does not apply to I and J, right? It doesn't include that income for the purpose of calculating disposable income under the means test. And so if your client excluded it on the means test, that establishes what they need to pay. You can include that money on I and J, and should, to demonstrate that the plan is feasible. That doesn't mean the trustee gets the bottom line. It simply means the plan is feasible. I've also had situations where, you know, the debtor was paying for their adult child's car.